Why stand still when you can run headfirst into a wall? You're listening to the Jocular Pugilists. May be aware of, this coming Monday is Memorial Day, or as they used to call it, Decoration Day. We'll talk about that in a sec. And I feel it'd be negligent of me as a co-host not to wish Phil a merry, happy, and joyous Memorial Day.
Well, thank you very much, Tomas. I have a question for you.
I'm all ears.
What the hell's the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day? I should know this by now. For Christ's sake, I've been around a long time.
Before I answer that question, Phil, I have to admit, though I had an inkling as to what the difference would be, and I was actually correct in my assumption, I too had to look it up to make sure.
Good. I feel much better now.
Yes, you're not the only dim-witted one on this podcast. I should first say that we're talking about the United States holiday of Memorial Day. Of course, other countries have very similar holidays to Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Memorial Day is a holiday observed on the last Monday in May, and its purpose is to honor the men and women of the armed forces who died in the line of duty to protect our freedoms. Whereas Veterans Day is a celebration of all veterans, living or deceased, whether they gave their lives in the line of duty or not, to honor them and express our appreciation for their service. So you may think of Memorial Day as being a little bit more of a somber celebration, and Veterans Day as being a little bit more of a joyous celebration. But both celebrations are a way for us to express our gratitude and remembrance and support for the military and its members. Pretty sure they both have parades, but the funny thing is, I'm not 100% sure. I would assume that there's more for Veterans Day because Memorial Day is more somber, but I don't know.
We will find out. See, this is people, this is why we do this show, so that we can learn things.
Not, exactly.
Not necessarily to educate you, but to educate us.
Yeah, my ability to be unaware of pretty obvious things knows no bounds.
Wow. Well, thank you for being willing to show your ignorance. I appreciate
it. I'm there
that.
For you. So that being said, it is this coming Monday, yeah. As I mentioned before, Memorial Day. And what do you know, parade or sans parade, Phil, what are your plans for Monday?
Yeah, what are the dates? So Memorial Day's last Monday in May. What's Veterans Day? Just out of curiosity.
Phil can see I'm reading this from my notes, but it's November 11th. But California, pools, it's getting to be nicer weather. You got to be invited to some pool party somewhere, don't you think?
You know what? I have to talk with Stacy. I have no idea. She manages our social calendar, it seems
okay,
like.
All right.
But yes, I'm sure there will be some sort of pool party or some sort of barbecue. If not, we'll do it ourselves. Because
yeah. You don't have a pool, though.
No.
We have a kid pool.
We have, look, one of those little, you know,
dizzy from
dip your toe in. Yep.
You know, when we used to live in Ossining, there was a Memorial Day parade, which proves there are parades on Memorial Day, that would go right by the front of our house. So we could just put our chairs out in front of our house and enjoy the parade. And I'm going to really embarrass my son here. Now, I'm going to preface this. He was younger than 8. I would say he was 5, 4. He was very young. But he would dress up sometimes like Captain America for the Memorial Day parade as it came by. And they loved him.
You know what, though? That makes so much more sense than had he chosen Iron Man or right. Thor or somebody else. He actually chose the guy that was, you know, a veteran.
Exactly. And it was when Marvel didn't suck. So,
wait, what are you trying to say, man?
I don't have to spell it out.
There?
Everyone's seen the Marvel movies lately. They know. There's okay. No debating it.
Fair enough.
It's gotten bad.
All right, well, let's jump right in. Tomas, how did Memorial Day start?
Well, it's always interesting, Phil. Before we get into it, I should mention again, I said this in the beginning, we're speaking of the United States holiday of Memorial Day. Of course, other countries have their own days commemorating their soldiers and armed services.
I'm glad you said that. I didn't even think of that. But yeah, of course.
Yeah, so for instance, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand have something called Remembrance Day. That's on November 11th, similar to our Veterans Day. Anzac Day, I'm probably saying that incorrectly, is Australia and New Zealand. That's on April 25th. that just passed. Armistice Day, and of course, that's a big one. In France and Belgium, I'm never going to be able to say this. Yom HaZikaron? I'm guessing at that. National Memorial Day? That's Israeli.
We have no problem insulting other cultures here by mispronouncing stuff.
Yeah, surprise. I can't speak Hebrew. That should come as a big surprise to you, Phil. Anyway, there's a lot of holidays all around the world that are very similar to Memorial Day. We're talking about our Memorial Day. And yes. You may not know this, Phil, but it was originally called Decoration Day.
Tomas, I don't know the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day. How am I supposed to know that Memorial Day it was Decorations Day? Where would that come from, that knowledge?
I had such high hopes for you, Phil. You let me down.
I know.
Well, let me illuminate you, Phil. What happened was people would go after the Civil War to the grave sites of fallen Civil War soldiers and decorate the graves to commemorate their service. So, therefore, Decoration Day. It took a long time for it to be the Memorial Day that we know, and it also took a very long time for it to be a federal holiday. One of the very first steps was taken by a former Union Civil War General, John A. Logan. He not only was an important commander in the Union Army, he was also a congressman from Illinois, and importantly, he was in charge of one of the very first veteran organizations in America. What he did, which was crucial to establishing Memorial Day as a national holiday, was he issued something called Order Number 11.
The time has come. Execute Order 66.
Yes, my lord.
Which designated May 30th as the day to decorate the graves of fallen soldiers. So that was the very first steps in making a national holiday.
I gotta say, I'm very relieved you said Union General, because when you started with General, I was thinking, well, if this is a Confederate General, I'm gonna be really pissed off at the legacy here.
Well, interestingly enough, funny that you say that, because in the beginning, it wasn't as widely celebrated in the former Confederate states as it was, of course, in the Northern states, in the Union.
Yeah.
So many towns had their own small celebrations, but eventually everyone started celebrating on May 30th. And at that point, they were still celebrating the Civil War, but after World War I, we started celebrating soldiers who gave their lives in any war. It didn't matter what the war, Spanish-American War, the War of 1812, of course, World War I. It took until 1971 for it to be an official holiday. Yeah, 1971. Congress passed something called the Uniform Monday Holiday Act, which established Memorial Day as the last day in May of every year.
What? 71? Wow. All right. Who was was this Ford? Who was president?
That's 71? A good question. I would think it would be at that point Nixon, if I can get my presidential dates correct.
Okay. It's actually Nixon. So you were right. It was right. It was before Ford, was a little bit later.
All right, there you go.
Okay, so we're talking about the Civil War, Tomas. I know you. I know your love of history and your love of warfare. So what battle do you want to talk about? I just know you're talking about a Civil War battle today.
Love of war. Come now, people are getting the wrong impression. I'm like this evil villain. Wow. But it's true. I actually do have some sort of interest in battles and things like that. So, of course, it's the Civil War. Yeah, I'm going to talk about a Civil War battle. I had thought at first maybe I should do some weird little-known war like the Spanish-American War, but no. If it originated from the Civil War, let's talk about a Civil War battle.
Okay. So before we talk about the actual battle, though, explain what it was like to live in America just prior to the Civil War.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, everyone knows we were incredibly divided before we even got to the Civil War. But a little interesting fact is, to give you a real clear picture of the country at that point, is Lincoln's first run for president. When he became president, the very first time, a bunch of the states did not participate in Lincoln's election.
That I didn't know. That's really interesting. So he wasn't even really elected by the whole
Yeah, and even in the remaining states, he only won 40% of the popular vote. It was really only because of the Electoral College that Lincoln was elected president. So he was really not a popular president. That means that 50% of the people, more than 50% of the people in the remaining states in the Union, didn't vote for him.
Wow.
So that person, the president that they didn't vote for, took the country into a civil war and eventually instituted a draft. So I think that's a really good way of taking the temperature of the country prior to the Civil War. It was tense.
It's an interesting thing because it almost makes me like Lincoln more because he was unpopular at the time and he still did the unpopular thing that was more difficult and right.
Yeah.
He did what was right even when it wasn't popular, which is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredibly impressive human being. If you want to get a good idea, I feel, of what he was like and what he was going through at the time, the Lincoln film starring Daniel Day-Lewis, an Irishman, he did an amazing job, I feel, portraying Lincoln and what he was going through at the time.
And it was a great look at a single moment in time. It didn't go through his whole presidency. It went through that just that moment. So it's really great.
Absolutely worth a watch if you haven't seen it yet.
Okay, so you had talked about a battle. What battle did you decide to research?
A doozy of a battle. We're going to talk about the bloodiest day in the bloodiest war in American history. The Battle of Antietam. When I had thought about which battle in the Civil War to research, of course you go to Gettysburg immediately because of the speech and there's so much about it. But I have a book that accompanied the Civil War documentary that Ken Burns became famous for. I think that's how his whole documentary thing really started, with that. But in that book, the very first paragraph of the first page of that book, it talks about how the Civil War, this incredibly costly war, almost 1 million people died, that war started with a battle that not a single person died from. At 4:30 a.m. on the 12th of April, 1861, Confederate gunners opened fire on Fort Sumter. 34 hours later, a white flag flew over the fort. Aside from one horse, there wasn't a single casualty. It was a bloodless opening to the most devastating war in American history.
God, of course it was the bloodiest war. We were fighting ourselves.
Cousins were fighting cousins. Brothers were fighting brothers. Fathers were fighting sons. We were looking across the battlefield at each other. And I can't imagine how difficult that would have been, fighting your family.
Right. Or like fighting each other. For example, we used to fight a lot, you know.
We still do.
I mean, that would be weird. I never stuck a bayonet inside you or anything like that. But yeah.
Funny enough, there weren't a lot of bayonets used, although they were affixed to guns still. They weren't used all that much. Luckily, the soldiers wanted to keep some distance between each other. So let me take you back to September 17th, 1862, near Sharpsburg, Maryland, along the Antietam Creek. That day, 22,727 people were wounded, dead, or missing.
Wow.
So to put that in perspective, during D-Day, America suffered 4,700 casualties.
Wow. Wow. So that was six times the amount, or almost six times, five and a half times the amount. That's incredible.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. And remember, I'm talking about a single day, not an entire campaign, a single day.
Right.
And it has to be said that at that point, things were not going splendid for the Union. In fact, they were going so poorly that Parliament suggested to Lincoln that they barter a treaty between the North and South, creating two separate countries. Lincoln was also dealing with a commander of his armies that was popular publicly, but unfortunately, not the greatest of commanders. He had lost some important battles, and he seemed to lack the fortitude to be the commanding general of the United States Army. I'm speaking about General George McClellan. He had the background that would seem to point to being a perfect person for the job, but unfortunately he wasn't. He was a West Point graduate. He served with distinction in the Mexican-American War, which happened about 15 years earlier. He also was the executive engineer on the railroads prior to the Civil War. So he seemed like the perfect person for the job, but unfortunately he wasn't. President Lincoln and he developed a mutual distrust of each other, and in private it was known that McClellan didn't approve of President Lincoln. By the time we get to the Battle of Antietam, McClellan had lost quite a few battles, including the First Battle of Bull Run and the Second Battle of Bull Run, as well as the Battle of Fredericksburg. This began to embolden the Confederacy, and the commanding general of the Confederacy, General Robert E. Lee, began to think one more victory might force Europe to recognize the Confederate States of America.
Wow.
So with all of this in mind, Lincoln not being a popular president, George McClellan, a very indecisive general, not a good trait for a general to have, being in charge of the Union armies.
You think?
Now, of course, this being said, I believe he was a very good tactician. He just didn't see things through.
So he could come up with a great plan, but then when it came down to
execution, yeah, it was right. It was pretty bad. Okay. And it basically put Lincoln into a corner. It was do or die at this point for Lincoln and, honestly, for General George McClellan's career as the commander of the Union Army.
Okay.
Now, because of how well the Confederacy was doing at this point, and because of how poorly the Union was doing at this point, General Robert E. Lee, for the first time, decided he would take a very large force of 40,000 Confederate soldiers and march them across the Potomac onto Union soil in Maryland.
And what happened?
Well, it's pretty interesting, luckily. Let me tell you. General Lee's attack plan, known as Special Order 191, involved splitting the Confederate forces into several columns, particularly into two large forces. He intended on capturing a garrison at Harper's Ferry, which is now where West Virginia is located. To do this, he dispatched General Stonewall Jackson, essentially his star athlete. And General Jackson was successful in taking Harper's Ferry. The other part of the army was commanded by General Lee himself, and they went to Sharpsburg, which served as a great defensive position for Lee's army. The Antietam Creek also served as a natural barrier to the Union troops. Now, this is completely crazy, but General McClellan actually found the plan. He got the plan. On September 13th, a Union soldier found a copy of Lee's battle plans. So McClellan actually had the instrument to which he might be able to end the Civil War.
And he blew it.
So he knew that Lee was dividing his army, which was significantly smaller at that point than the Union army. And he would be able to amass a huge force and crush the army, forcing it to surrender. Lee was there. But because of his indecisiveness, he did nothing for 18 crucial hours.
All right. So what did he do instead?
He didn't do enough. He did one very good thing, which was he amassed a very large Union force. But for 18 hours, he pretty much didn't do anything.
So wait a minute. So let me understand that. When you say 18 crucial hours, is this 18 crucial hours leading up to the battles that happened?
Yeah, so he knew when it was going to happen and where it was going to happen. He did nothing for 18 hours. He allowed Lee to get all the way to his goal.
Wow.
So on September 15th, one of the Confederate armies took up a position along a ridge east of the town of Sharpsburg, only about 52 miles from Washington, D.C., right in front of a creek called Antietam, and that's why they call it the Battle of Antietam. I believe that in the South, some people still call it the Battle of Sharpsburg. Now, McClellan was waiting for Lee when he arrived, but again, he allowed Lee to arrive. He allowed Lee to dig in and basically prepare for the battle that would ensue. So he didn't attack him when he was at his most vulnerable, let's say.
So how many, do we know how many Union soldiers were there?
That's a good question. Enough that a Southern general proclaimed when they arrived that they said at the other side of the Antietam Creek was a sea of blue uniforms as far as the eye could see.
Wow.
And enough that if McClellan had attacked when they were arriving and setting up, they likely would have ended the Civil War.
When you hear, now hindsight of course is always 20/20, but when you hear stuff like that, it's just got to make you crazy. I mean,
an aide to Robert E. Lee actually said there's a single advantage that the Confederate Army has in this battle. He said, yes, McClellan brought superior forces, but he also brought himself.
Wow, there's a tremendous lack of respect there. For
yeah, they knew.
In that quote, that's awesome.
The battle began 2 days later with three separate engagements. The first was at 6 a.m. when a Union field commander named General Joe Hooker, or as he was known, Fightin' Joe, ordered his men to take a plateau that had Confederate artillery on it.
And he was a boxer before.
Apparently, yeah. As his men cautiously moved forward, he noticed the gleam of Confederate bayonets in a cornfield that bordered the plateau. Now, as a side note, one of my students mentioned to me that he was given a tour of that battlefield by a former World War II veteran quite some time ago. And he said that when he reached the battlefield with this tour guide, as he got out and he looked at the cornfield, before he started speaking, he solemnly made a prayer to commemorate what had happened in that cornfield over 100 years ago because it was so momentous.
So he couldn't see the wait. He couldn't see the soldiers, but he saw the bayonets sticking up out of the cornfield.
Yes, he did.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. I like that. Go ahead.
General Hooker then ordered four Union batteries to fire on that cornfield.
Ooh. Yeah.
The Confederates weren't going to just sit in the cornfield. What did they do? They immediately charged the Union troops, and they did so ferociously. Right. Within just a couple of minutes, the Union lost 224 of 334 men that were charging the hill. And General Joe Hooker himself, Fightin' Joe, had to be carried from the field because of a bullet wound.
Wow.
The battle raged back and forth for a while when finally the Union managed to start moving forward towards the plateau where their artillery was. Seeing that the Union was moving towards the plateau, Confederate General Robert E. Lee ordered one of the fiercest fighting units of the entire Confederate Army to reinforce Hooker's remaining men. They were actually eating breakfast at the time, and they were not happy that they had to stop eating. And boy, did they take it out on the Union troops. A Confederate commander that survived the battle said that it was as if a huge sickle, a huge sword, cut through the corn, cutting the corn and every Union soldier in two exactly where they were but a minute before.
Wow.
A Union commander that managed to get back to the Union lines was asked, "Where are your troops, Commander? Where are your troops?" He said, "Dead. Every last one of them is dead in that cornfield." By 10 a.m., 8,000 men were dead or wounded, and there was no victor in the battle. That was but the first of three engagements.
These are three battles of that
Correct,
day.
Correct, exactly. Three separate different battles or engagements, as I said,
okay.
that day.
Okay.
The second battle was the Battle of the Sunken Road, or the Bloody Road, as it's known. It was basically a road, but it looks as if it was a river that was dried. So if you can imagine a dry river without any water in it, the indentation where the water would flow is the road.
That's exactly what it looks like.
And remember, there were cameras at that point, so there are actually pictures of the Sunken Road. It's easy to find on the web. Just look up Antietam, Bloody Road, or Sunken Road, and you'll see what it looks like. So that road, that Sunken Road, served as a rifle pit for two brigades of Confederate riflemen. Lee ordered it held at all costs. When the Union attacked, Confederates let them get within a few yards before they opened fire, and they just slaughtered the Union soldiers. Five times the Union attack. All five times they were slaughtered. Finally, a New York regiment, yay, go New York, they found a position in which they could fire down on the Sunken Road. They turned that Sunken Road into what's known now as Bloody Lane. By the ending of the battle, it was so filled with the corpses of fallen Confederate soldiers that Union soldiers could walk right over that road and stand on those bodies as they fired at retreating Confederate soldiers.
They could walk right over them. Yeah. Wow.
If you are interested, by the way, you really should look at the pictures. It's unbelievable. And the body count is just, it's just so heartbreaking what human beings can do to each other. I don't know why battle is still fascinating. It shouldn't be. It's just horrid.
So, the first battle, the Confederate Hearts won of the day. The second battle.
Well, I don't know if they won, but they didn't really lose. They didn't move. The Confederates didn't move forward, but they repelled a Union advance. So you can see that as perhaps a stalemate.
Well, it sounds like this one, the Confederates, the second one, the Confederates didn't beat back. It sounds like the Union soldiers won this one.
Well, it's not over yet.
All right. Good to know. Continue.
All right, so the Union troops are pushing forward. They've pushed over the sunken road, and the Confederates are retreating. But unfortunately, General McClellan decided that it wouldn't be prudent at this moment to keep moving forward, and he pulled the Union troops back.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. My God.
This is brutal. This is really terrible to listen to. It just makes me angry. All right, go ahead. This is like watching one of those like a really terrible movie where you know what's going to happen. You know that I don't know. All right, go ahead. It's like watching a horror movie from the 80s. Go ahead.
So now you understand why Lincoln was so annoyed at General McClellan. He seemed to have pretty good reason. The third and final battle to take place was on a stone bridge that crossed Antietam Creek. 12,500 Union soldiers were ordered to cross and attack a small force of merely 400 Confederate soldiers. Seems like an easy task. There's a big problem, though. Those soldiers were on a bluff above the bridge.
Wow.
What did they do? They poured down a relentless barrage of bullets on those Union soldiers. It took 3 bloody hours for the Union soldiers to cross that bridge. When they finally broke through the Confederate line, the Union soldiers cheered. They had lost so many soldiers at that point, and it felt as if the battle was finally won. But while they were cheering, while they were celebrating, a division of the Confederate Army from Harper's Ferry, they had just won at Harper's Ferry, with Stonewall Jackson arrived and forced the Union troops back over that bridge. The Union field commander begged McClellan for reinforcements, but to no avail. The battle was over. Not a single inch was gained on either side. There was no winner of Antietam.
Of course.
2,108 Union soldiers died. 10,293 were wounded. That's double the casualties of D-Day again, just on the Union side. The Confederate Army had similar numbers. In total, there was 10,318 casualties. It's mind-numbing how many people lost their life in that battle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, although it really was a draw and there was no victor, in some ways, the Union Army did better. In some ways, Lincoln was a victor. And this is how. The Confederates, well, you know, they were on the verge of winning the entire war, or at least being recognized as its own country. And that didn't happen because it was a draw. And it also did something for Lincoln. It gave him finally enough ammunition to get rid of George McClellan. And he did. He then promoted General Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, to be the commander of the Union Armed Forces. These are two things that you can consider to be a win for the Union. And finally, it actually gave him the political confidence to issue the Emancipation Proclamation, declaring all those who held slaves within enemy territory as free. So any of the Confederate states, he said, you're all free. So in a lot of ways, the Battle of Antietam was one of the most, if not the most influential and most important battle of the entire Civil War. So, Phil, I have a question for you. Who's buried at Grant's tomb?
That would be Grant.
You are so sharp. Have you been to Grant's Tomb?
I think so. I don't remember it really well, but yeah, I'm pretty sure. School trip or something.
I've actually been fairly recently, and it's totally worth a visit. So if you don't know what to do during this Memorial Day, it probably would be busy. You would think it'd be busy. It would be very appropriate to visit Grant's Tomb. That's something you can do if you're within the New York metropolitan area.
All right, let me jump into some of the things, well, at least for people in LA, because that is where I am, to do on Memorial Day. And I'm sure a lot of these will translate into things you can do in other parts of the country, but this is what I found. Maybe I won't do a barbecue, maybe I'll do one of these. The first one is, have you ever heard of Catalina Island?
Yeah, absolutely, I've heard of it. And I wanted to visit it, actually, which we didn't. We should, you know? What do you think?
Yeah, we can definitely go out there because I've never been, but I'd love to go. There's glass bottom boat rides, which if you ever...
Is that a euphemism?
No, it's not. Although, it might be an interesting position. Never mind. All right. There's also buffalo actually roaming the area. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I don't know. There's something wrong with me. Everything right now sounds like a euphemism to me.
Why?
I don't know. I need therapy.
You are a deviant, my friend. You are. Well, we'll get off Catalina.
Why the hell did you have to say that?
All right. So some other things to do. We are fortunate enough to have the beaches. And the beaches, a lot of the, particularly the national park beaches, you can barbecue, you can camp out, and you can grill. Great place for Memorial Day weekend. Really, really beautiful.
I may be wrong, but I feel like lots of people enjoy barbecuing on Memorial Day.
You can go to the Kern River. Now, the Kern River, I actually did this one Memorial Day weekend with a bunch of friends of mine. I was probably living in LA for a few years, and a bunch of us went up to the Kern River, and it was beautiful. We found this little outlet right on the river where we could all set up our tents. And I had my own tent, a big group of us. We were partying one night. I think it was the first night of the trip or the second night, whatever. We were partying really hard. We all got kind of drunk. And you know, they say you're supposed to pack up all of your food and anything that's scented and put it away so that animals don't get to it. Well, we got too drunk and we just passed out. It was a very windy night. It woke me up, and all of a sudden, I heard some growling, and then this massive something leans on the side of my tent, like sits down on the side of my tent, and I'm looking at this thing like, am I dreaming this, or is this for real? First of all, I was still drunk, so I didn't want to leave my tent. Also, I didn't want to get mauled by whatever it was that was out there. And I ended up just falling back asleep, which I don't know how I managed to do that, but I did. I fell right back asleep.
That was me, Phil. I was just, I was out there in my Bigfoot costume and just enjoying a nice evening walk. And then I saw food and well, I'm coming out kind of hungry. That was good to me.
Hey, boo-boo, let's see what we got in this picnic basket.
This explains a lot, because we woke up in the morning and I said, well, Tomas must have been here, because look, there's no, all the food was ripped open and everything was like all over the place.
You really are. Right. I'm such a mess, especially with that costume on. It's hard.
So anyway, if you have the weekends and you can go up there, it is a fantastic place to camp, and it's beautiful. And the water will be warm enough for Memorial Day that you should be able to go in and check it out. It's a beautiful place, Kern River.
I'd assume the beaches are just bananas in LA during Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah. The beaches are going to be nuts on Memorial Day. Now, there are places with fewer crowds. For example, Santa Monica, where you stayed, forget it. You know, it's going to be a madhouse, or Hermosa Beach is going to be nuts. All those places are going to be crazy. So you have to go. If you were going to go to the beach, I would definitely recommend kind of doing a little research and figuring out which beaches are going to be a little less crowded. And this is something that Lou, when he lived here, he used to do all the time, every year. And it is an amazing event. And this is really, it's not a family thing, but if you're single and you want to go have some fun, or you're with a group of friends, it is awesome. It's called Fiesta Hermosa Beach. And it's basically they block off a big part of Hermosa Beach, and they have arts and crafts and food and live music, and there's a main stage, and they usually have tribute bands that come in. So, you know, some sort of Led Zeppelin tribute band or the Eagles or Kendrick, or you know the way that goes.
I do indeed. You mean it wasn't an a-ha tribute band? A one-hit wonder tribute band?
They just keep playing the one song over and over again. Take on me for 4 hours.
Yeah, some good vocals on that song.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love the idea of one-hit wonder tribute bands.
So what do I normally do for Memorial Day? You nailed it at the beginning of the podcast. It's some sort of barbecue at somebody's house or somebody's poolside, and it's always fun. I love that. Is my favorite way to spend Memorial Day,
right? With friends, and right, yeah. you know who your friends are. If you're staying at home, you're like, what did I say? What did I do? All right, so this I think brings us to a nice conclusion of the podcast. You might ask, why did I decide to go through the gruesome details of the Battle of Antietam? We could have just talked about how thankful we are for those that have given their lives in the service of our country to protect our freedoms without reliving the horror of war. The reason I talked about it was because I feel like we're in an interesting time. In the United States of America, we haven't had a draft since Vietnam. I think possibly many of us have forgotten what it means to sacrifice in the way that those soldiers did. And as time goes by, more and more of the veterans of these substantial wars, they're passing away, and with them, perhaps, the memory of that sacrifice. I fear that if the memory continues to fade, we may become too cavalier with war, and we may be likely to repeat it. I might be being overdramatic, and God knows I've been way too dramatic in my life before, but I feel like we're more divided now than ever in my life. I just hope and pray that we understand the tightrope we're walking on, and try as hard as we can to heal the wounds that divide us and to come together again as a nation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when you're out barbecuing and making your burgers and making your hot dogs and eating your steak and whatever, just remember that. You know, think about that. Okay, well, we are the Jocular Pugilists. Thank you for joining us for another episode. If you want to learn more about us, you can go to our website at thejocularpugilists.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, get our downloads immediately, and leave a 5-star rating and review and tell us how we're doing. Well, I hate to love you, my man.
I love to hate you, Phil. And let's do our best this Memorial Day to make sure that the people that gave their lives for our freedom didn't do so in vain.